Hello, welcome to the Not My Fault Theology Podcast. It's Not Popular, episode 248. My name is Justin.
And mine's Helen.
Yeah, Helen, we once again had to really just get right into what's happening because, you know, we got lots of events happening, and in this episode alone, we have lots to talk about, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, normally we would be like this anyway because that's kind of how we do like our start of season shows, but we also have a fair amount of news this week. And this isn't even like news we forgot to cover in the past episode. Like, no, there's just been a surprising amount of news, especially since we're starting off with the big one. The Crunchyroll Shorts store is shutting down. Kind of. Sort of. Yeah. So
effectively, allegedly, let's go to all that.
Let's just toss in every adjective because between them, you know, we'll describe the situation. So let's see. Going back several years now, as folks probably remember, Sony bought Funimation, bought Crunchyroll, bought Right Stuff. Earlier this year, it was announced that the old Right Stuff warehouse in Iowa was for sale. It turns out that Sean Kleckner never actually sold the warehouse itself to the company we are effectively just going to call Crunchyroll. He never sold it to them, so they've been kind of paying him rent, and apparently he was now selling it. And so that's when we all started seeing a ton of sales on the Crunchyroll website. Like, I was looking back through my receipts. At one point, I got 12 volumes of manga for $96 because they were doing a buy four, get two free sale. So everyone is thinking, you know, the way they're liquidating everything, it kind of feels like they're probably not going to have a store after this. And the sales have been continuing. I don't think Crunchyroll has announced publicly that a lot of this has been because that they're having to close the Iowa warehouse. But they have made an announcement that they are going to be effectively closing the store on August 12th. And after that, maybe also on August 12th, maybe on a slightly later date, they're going to reopen the store, but you can only buy from it if you have one of their higher tier subscriptions. Folks might remember that by this point, you can't really watch anime on Crunchyroll for free anymore. They've essentially gotten rid of almost anything you can watch, you know, free with ads, which is crappy in and of its own right. And they've got three tiers of paid membership. And if you have the basic tier, which is what I and my mother use when she is rewatching The Apothecary Diaries. But no, even that will not be good enough to let you shop at the Crunchyroll store. You have to pay a higher subscription so that you can buy things from their store. They're billing it as, we're going to have a lot of exclusives, yada yada yada. But I think I've seen some people describing it as, it kind of sounds like a worse version of Costco, because at least Costco still has the $1.50 hot dogs.
I would say even in general, like, you can't even compare them, because at the start, Costco's promised that it'll be like this, but they also give you really good deals. This Crunchyroll store idea with only Mega and Ultimate fans having the rights to it, it's not even close to the same. It's just not. So yes, as Helen mentioned, there's just been a final sale for a lot of things. So if you're looking for like any particular manga or even some anime, you're not going to find them on Crunchyroll listed there because it's removed or there's some final sales, so you're only going to see this one or two things from a particular series. This is a bad idea.
Oh, hang on, I think sorry.
We've kind of been over this before about Crunchyroll deciding to get rid of the just in general roll Right Stuff into itself and go to the Crunchyroll store. That was a bad idea in itself. And over time, the use of the Crunchyroll store just going downwards. I would only use it if there was sales, or if there was just something that they were not selling anywhere else. Like, I would get the Cyberpunk Edgerunners and then Licorice Recoil. That was really but pretty much it. Anything else, I would just look elsewhere. Maybe they were seeing that during the numbers. Or they're just seeing something ahead of time or in the future where it's just like, okay, we just can't keep all this. And as also Helen mentioned, they're going to essentially lose the Iowa store because they didn't really pay for that. So it's like, all right, what are we going to do next? I guess somebody in their big brain idea, instead of committing to actually wanting to have physical properties in their warehouse, they decided we're just going to make this exclusive thing for people who pay a lot for Crunchyroll, the streaming service. But have you considered people just want to just watch streams? They don't actually want to shop at the store. What if people on that basic tier wanted to actually use the store? I think you just cut off people who wanted to actually use the store, guys.
Yeah, it's like, is this going to make me subscribe to a higher subscription level just so I can use the store? Oh, hell no. This is going to do the opposite.
Nobody in corporate, like I made the mention on my Twitter, like did nobody in corporate even like suggest this would be something people would do instead, or was there pushback, or did they all literally agree like, yes, it's a good idea? Or is it a case where there are overlords, aka Sony, who I was mentioning a few weeks ago, we had, at least I put in the script about PlayStation, essentially, make sure I get the details correct, but I think they're essentially ending physical disc production for their PlayStation consoles. It's going to happen a couple years from now, so in 2028. I did put in the script, it might be something to monitor, because considering home media releases for Crunchyroll has been dwindling over the past, year or so. Maybe it's like some of their exclusive stuff, or maybe like their top stuff, like Free Rent and Apothecary Diaries and stuff like that. But what's happening instead was we have like store exclusive stuff, like to Walmart or something like that, and then we have just some other home media releases, like they just announced Reincarnated Seven Prince as a home media release. But then it's just very few and far between, like what's being released for home media versus what's not. And they have so much anime every season. And there's still some anime that haven't released at home media at all. Who knows what's the hold up for all of that? So we already knew that it was dwindling going that way. So I was suggesting that with PlayStation, or essentially Sony announcing that they're going to end this production a couple years from now, how will home media for Crunchyroll be affected? Well, I haven't said it yet, but when you do this for Crunchyroll, the Crunchyroll store, it already gets the mind going that, yeah, they're going to eventually just stop doing home media in general. And that's very, very bad.
You know, I was thinking that with this whole thing, that now that they are essentially killing off right stuff, you know, in every way, like, when they bought right stuff a couple of years back, there was already some discussions in my circles of, is this kind of one of those catch-to-kill things where Sony kind of doesn't want anyone selling DVDs now, so they kind of want to, like, eliminate all places people could buy them? And I genuinely don't know if that was the plan or not, but that is kind of where we've ended up now, since now it kind of looks like Sony just spent a whole bunch of money and did absolutely nothing with it. Like, it doesn't sound like they really even retained a lot of the anime titles that Right Stuff / Nozomi had licensed, so just, there are no winners from this. Like, I mean, Sean Clechter for getting a whole bunch of money to go along with the $1 million house he owns in Des Moines, Iowa. But, yeah, the rest of us are all suffering.
Yeah, and I guess we can also go back to the when Crunchyroll was eventually picked up by Sony thanks to AT&T. We all had to go way back to when this happened, and AT&T was just in sell-off mode of all their stuff. It didn't matter what it was. They just needed to sell it. We pinpoint back to that moment and thinking, like, I think at the time, there wasn't another competitor that was just as bad as Sony was going to be. I can't remember what it was. I don't think it was Comcast at the time, right? But there was some other company, I think, that was also bidding for Crunchyroll, so no matter what, I guess it was going to be pretty bad. But I bring this up because I think back to where the decision came from, Crunchyroll and Funimation. Well, obviously Sony had obviously owned Funimation at the time, and then eventually they got Crunchyroll. We knew it was going to be like the first Crunchyroll Funimation partnership was not going to be the same thing, just totally different types of situation and everything. And then obviously, I think this was how COVID happened. It's been a long, I'm thinking COVID happened 2020, right? It's been so, it's, how am I losing COVID
happened, right? Yes, COVID was 2020, infamously.
Okay, just making sure. Because I'm thinking, like, yeah, obviously COVID happened, the whole economic situation changed. Just not the same as when Crunchyroll and Funimation first partnership and everything. And I think also just in general, anime industry was not the same back then. But yes, lots of things have changed since between then and when Sony bought Crunchyroll. And then it eventually decided what to go with, Funimation or Crunchyroll. And at the time, I basically said that it made more sense to go with the Crunchyroll name, because as much as I can see Funimation had the longer, obviously, branding power because they were been around longer. But I mean, they were more notable in North America for at least my money.
Yeah, I remember I disagreed with you at the time.
I felt like Crunchyroll at the time was just more notable globally. And then also, I think just streaming wise, they were just better. I just think that the time Funimation just had some issues streaming wise. So yeah, it was a tough decision, but I think that's why one reason why I went to Crunchyroll. But I think my sentiments kind of changed considering the reaction. What's been happening, at least on I don't know how it's going on Blue Sky. We're just seeing so much, like, Crunchyroll's, like, taking a hit. Like, this is bad Crunchyroll, like, awful Crunchyroll and all that stuff. And I'm just seeing lots of praise about Funimation. Like, oh, yeah. I miss Funimation and all that stuff. I'm like...
Yeah, on Blue Sky, it's lots of Crunchyroll is terrible, but nobody is calling for the return of Funimation. Everyone in my circles on Blue Sky is old enough to be like, yeah, Funimation also had their problems, so we're not calling for the revival of that.
Yeah,
it's, I will say though, I mentioned this during our Manga in Your Ears podcast recording, and when we took like our little mid-upset break, you know, to catch a drink, you know, April asked what it was, and I was explaining to Star, and she's like, "Hang on, I need to go tell my roommate about this right now. This is so stupid."
Hmm?
As I was explaining the whole situation, she's like, "Listen, Helen just told me about this thing."
Okay, got you. But yeah, I think back to that decision to keep to let Crunchyroll, I guess, essentially take a quote unquote legacy hit. Because I'm not, I mean, granted, I don't think Crunchyroll's still going away anytime soon. First of all, they're so deep into like the Japanese people, like just the Japanese publishers and production companies and everything, that they're not going away anytime soon. And I'm pretty sure there's a number of Japanese companies that are still pleased about the situation in general. Like, I don't know if they also, I think, are moving into that whole streaming digital type of ownership thing, or digital space, not ownership, but that is what we call media, then that's fine for them. But I feel like that makes that Funimation won't be like, people could be like, okay, this was like Funimation did good, and now there's a time where we miss Funimation, all that stuff. But I think it's a case where you have, like, people that were still around in Texas that are now running Crunchyroll that's also making these decisions, and it's a case I didn't think about that. It's that revisionist history you don't think about all the time, but now you have that here, and it's happening. It's real, like, people's like, oh man, look at Crunchyroll doing this and that, and not Funimation. It's a little weird, but it's unfortunately just reality, because whatever good Crunchyroll did for the industry, I think it's a big hit. They're just making so many poor decisions. Forget just like the Crunchyroll store, just some of their decisions in general. As you mentioned, the subscription, just making sure like nobody can watch for free. Although they're joining like every other company, that's you have to subscribe to watch it. But still,
oh, to be clear, I think that all of them are doing a terrible job there. You know,
right. Right. So yeah, the downgrade of Crunchyroll, it's been continuing. So it's been something to watch. And behold, and who knows, they're gonna make y'all pitch make more bad decisions moving forward. Obviously nobody's happy about this, but I think as far as I know, Crunchyroll still hasn't tweeted or said anything since the announcement. They don't really seem to tweet in general, and I hate to say this, or it's an aside, but Twitter made this like mobile update. It's so bad. You have the tweets now as posts, So you have posts as in like one section, then you have retweets in another section. So it's not all together anymore. And it's actually kind of annoying. It's like, why would I want to go to another tab to see somebody's retweets? It's kind of annoying. But as far as I know, Crunchyroll still hasn't tweeted or said anything since then. But they weren't saying much in general from just a brief look. So I'm just like, are they just getting just pounded, just like how the PlayStation social media has been getting just totally angry tweets since the whole PlayStation announcement? They did not want any of that. Very, very curious about that. But yeah, this is another really big hit to physical media, which I guess has been. I think we talked eons ago about how, especially for manga, like, oh yeah, digital's gonna take over, and it actually didn't take over at the time. But now it seems like, I guess, either now companies just pushing forward to this, or. And I guess also I should mention, someone else gets this decision alone without the whole economic mess that's also happening, generally speaking. You can also have governments allowing this to happen. You obviously have, I think, the after effects of COVID, where sales just at an all-time high, and companies are realizing, wait, this is only gonna be temporary. Hold up. Everybody's not gonna be at home for the foreseeable future. Think better. Think smarter. So a lot, it's not just a Sony like own thing, but yeah, it's rough, Helen. It's rough. We have very few spaces of physical media in general, so not looking forward to what the future is going to hold for the Crunchyroll store, and I'm looking forward to at some point them saying that they're going to eventually close the Crunchyroll store, making the whole right stuff thing just kind of moot. But yeah, it's bleak, Helen. It's bleak.
All right. Moving on to our next bit of news, I guess. Hang on, I gotta get back to the right window. I've been chasing the dogs around as Justin's been talking.
Wait, Helen, you should describe the experience of dog sitting. You should do it right now.
The experience of dog sitting is that they will sleep for hours and hours and then decide to wake up and do stuff exactly as I need to make calls with people. It's kind of amazing, honestly. All right, so I had totally forgotten about this whole thing, so I am just going to use Justin's summary that he has put in the script. So, Anime International Company, AIC, announced on July 3rd that it has won a civil suit against AIC Rights and producer Yoshikazu Maeda, with the company now recognized as a shareholder of AIC Rights. This lawsuit began back in 2021, was about AIC demanding a return of shares of AIC Rights, and so 4 years on, the Tokyo District Court initially ruled in favor of AIC in March 2025. AIC Rights and producer Yoshikazu Maeda filed an appeal to the Tokyo High Court, which affirmed the Tokyo District Court's original decision in July 2025. Maeda then filed a final appeal to the Supreme Court. So apparently, Japan's justice system works very similarly to the US one. And the Supreme Court refused to accept the appeal on May 27th earlier this year, thus again affirming its original decision. So it sounds like AIC wanted something. AIC Rights said no, and all of the courts said no, AIC is right.
Yeah, basically.
AIC is
And yeah,
correct. To be different from AIC,
it's
right? God damn it.
yeah. Don't you love it, Helen? AAC rights. Wait, there's diff there's aren't they the same? Are they not the same? So yeah, just to point out some of the notable IPs as under AAC rights, the Megazone 23, Hades Project, Zeoreamer, the Gaio, Bungo Crisis, Gale Force, Tenchi Muyo. I think we talk about Tsuchimiya at some point in this episode somehow, so I was curious that it popped up here. But yes, I'm honestly not sure what in general this could mean. I assume this would mean like, hey, they could actually do something with these rights now that no more legal lease and all that stuff. So we could, I mean, it's unlikely because they're really old shows, old franchise, I say. But we could be hearing about some of these moving forward. But yeah, it is something to monitor. I think it's obviously something that we'll get another anime of these type of franchises moving forward. This was what happened. This decision is the reason why it happened. So we definitely have to note that this was the case. This next one, I kind of was like, I didn't look at the details of this. I knew it was announced. Like, I want to say, I think it was close to Anime Expo, right? It was close around Anime Expo, but yeah, I saw this. Like, oh wait, I think you actually sent this to me online. I think, but I think I kind of dismissed it a little bit. So yeah, entertainment news website Variety reported that Kung Gao, who's the founder and the former CEO of Crunchyroll, launched the AnyBiz.com platform through his anime-focused media company, Nakama. Yes, friends. Friendship! Nakama. Didn't One Piece trademark that? Why didn't they trademark that? So this platform is live, and it's described as the first dedicated business-to-business marketplace built specifically for the global anime industry. I'm not going to get into all the details. I'll obviously have the link for it, so you can look at the whole main information about it. But the general gist of it is to kind of connect the annual AP rights holders and decision makers, AK licensors, so it's a mix of studios, production studios, et cetera, and making sure it can actually be licensed where it needs to be licensed. It's not just specifically anime, it could be a whole bunch of merch and stuff like that. The general gist is to foster collaborations and lower the barrier to entry for anyone around the world interested in working with anime IP in both established and developing international markets. So, Gao told Variety like a couple of things, but he also made like a couple statements to ANN, and one that I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit was the part where he said that due to the complicated nature of anime licensing, it is difficult for new licensees to break into the business, and it is also difficult for licensors to find new licensees and handhold them into this process. People might not be aware, but licensing is complicated for a variety of
reasons.
Who
is listening to this podcast and not aware of that?
it gets me thinking about some of the... We obviously get a lot of anime that's been licensed over the past couple of years. That's obviously due to partnerships and everything. But we actually had a few that were not licensed. And a couple that came to mind for me was April Showers Making Flowers, which aired in the summer of 2025. That got added to Prime earlier this year, early January, I mentioned. Or had to go to YouTube. Obviously, I rem now with a couple of the shows. I'm still just kind of honestly puzzled that Umusume was still just locked on YouTube. And couldn't go anywhere else. But obviously, these past season had Magical Sisters Lily, which didn't get picked up initially. And then I think either by the third or fourth week, it got put on Bandai Namco Pictures' YouTube. And then at some point, it got put on Tubi TV.
I know that ANN's Lindsay took credit for it being on YouTube. Apparently, they got turned down like 3 times by licensors. I don't know if it was necessarily Crunchyroll 3 times or if they went to like 3 different licensors and got turned down. And so apparently she suggested to them at like the Tokyo Anime Show or something like that, just put it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's getting rough out there. Or we have a situation where we still got stuff that's still not licensed. Blue Orchestra, which has had 2 seasons actually, but according to Wikipedia, it has only been officially streaming in Southeast Asia on Aniplus Asia. But that's one example. But I feel like another stunning example is I Have a Crush at Work. This is a manga that's published by Kodansha. It got an anime last year. Nobody has picked it up yet. Like, it's only officially streaming on anyone Asia's YouTube channel in South and Southeast Asia. But it did not get paid with Disney Plus Hulu when they supposedly have a Crunchyroll Disney deal is one thing, and then either Crunchyroll or Amazon or even Netflix, none of them, or HIDIVE even, didn't pick this up. Still boggles my mind. It's like, what happened here? So when I hear about the AnyBiz and their desire to, or their one of their goals to just kind of make the process easier, it made me think of those shows. That did they have like licensing troubles, or do they just not know anybody in these companies to get these like properly licensed and everything? So for now, I just say it has potential. I'm just curious about it. We'll see if this changes anything in industry. I think the only thing is, like, I think, again, these companies are kind of running on finite, or they can only have so many resources to get these shows. Obviously, Crunchyroll licenses a lot of things. So, I mean, they'll be the obviously the one that gets the most licenses every season. But then you also have budgets for all these other streaming services. So it's like, well, we only have so much resources to go around. Can we get this title or not? So it's also possible that they just really don't have the resources to license certain titles or license every single title. But we'll see if this changes moving forward, if this actually opens things up for any other anime down the line.
I doubt it. I think this is more just a cash grab for those folks who used to work at Crunchyroll. That was also the general opinion of Blue Sky.
I mean, it could definitely be that too. I am not disputing that either. it's just that I just missed it literally when you said it, because I was probably like you, like, yeah, I was like, yeah, okay, it's probably, especially with the founder or the original CEO of Crunchyroll, yeah, whatever. But there's some details in here that are like, I guess it's something worth monitoring, and we'll see if that ends up changing in the future.
Okay, so we've also got some hiatuses and such to talk about. The After God manga is going to be taking a break following the early access release of chapters 106, 107. No stated date yet on when it's going to return. Go-Go Loser Ranger is also going on hiatus again. It's going on hiatus until August due to its creator, Negi Haruba, needing some time to recuperate. This one's been on hiatus a number of times, I feel like. Back me up, Justin. It's been a couple of times, right?
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, so hope whatever they've got going on is something that can be recuperated from and not, like, a chronic illness, since those suck to have. And we do have a couple of obituaries for this time as well. The son of actress and... the son of the voice actress Yukiko Nikaido announced on Facebook that Nikaido died on July 3rd of old age at the age of 87. And she's best known for her role as Fujiko Mine in the first Lupin the Third television anime series from 71 to 72. And I believe this means that the entire original cast has now passed away. That's what I saw some folks saying. Also, book author and illustrator Akiko Hayashi died of pneumonia on July 1st in a hospital in Nagano Prefecture at age 81. She was known for doing a number of children's picture books and illustrations in Japan, but is primarily known for illustrating the first novel of Eiko Kondono's children's novel, Kiki's Delivery Service. And then finally, the official site formerly known as Twitter account for Kadokawa's Aokishi magazine announced that manga creator Ryochiro Keizuka died back in late May. Keizuka had launched a Record Journey manga in Aokishi magazine back in 2021, and Titan Manga released the manga in English a few months ago, May 26th, so might have been right around the time he passed, so that's really sad if so.
Yeah, I had noted that because I was like, did the manga come out in English around May 26th? I'm like, we don't know exactly. They just say late May. Probable that the author was already was in serious health issues before then. But yeah, it was just really sad to note that. It really, really, my sincere condolences to his family and friends for sure. All right, Helen, is it time for licenses this time?
It appears so.
All right, well...
Anime Expo was not enough. There's still a few more. There were a couple more that came out since then.
Well, yeah, but the good news is not as much.
And most of these are digital announcements as well.
That is true. But Helen, we did get...
Spain finally scored!
There's a goal?
Yeah, at 105 fucking minutes.
Who scored?
Spain. And oh, hang on, the dogs are very excited about this. I think I need to let them outside. Yeah. You start reading out the licenses.
Fine. I'll be going over the licenses happened. And I guess start with Seven Seas Out of Nowhere. One for Wednesdays. Seven Seas Bright is where it's at now. So they surprise announced they've licensed Kazuo Umezu's take on Ultraman. Obviously, gonna be a the classic manga collection that they have. So it's gonna be a nice hardcover, all that stuff. This is scheduled for July of 2027. And then, as Helen mentioned earlier, we have more digital licenses to announce. Negusi Okita's Soon You'll Paint Your Heart Out, and Tabureko's Baby Road Trippers. To manga plus. Ichiro Sasaki, Yohei Yamauchi, and Hiro Yasukawa's Ahikawa's Trained to Be the Ultimate Anti-Magic Spellblade, Yo Hiromatsu no Samu Kosuke's Ugly Mug Epic Fighter SSS, and Kanade Ezaki's Agureko Getting Into the Voice Like the Spirit is now on Square Enix's Manga Up service. And we had literally so much manga news, and I totally forgot to put this on the script. Akemi Yoshida's Banana Fish and Hisaya Nakajo's Hanakimi have been added to Viz Manga's library. So this is again announced around, this was put up around like July 1st on the services, so around like AX time, and I just totally forgot to add it on the script last episode. It's on here now! You can now finally read all these works, both these two works on the service. And it was pointed out in the comments or in the tweet that this is the Hanakimi is going to be is the first Hakusensha title that's been added to the Viz Manga service. So maybe Under the Dawn eventually. My guess, if that happens, is going to be when the manga finishes in English. This is a guess. I don't know. That is just a guess. So it's going to be a while. I think the final volume of Yoda Dawn is going to be next year, early next year. But we'll see. We'll see.
Okay, the dogs did not actually want to go outside. One of them may have just farted so much that she startled herself. Unsure.
That's
this is why I like cats better than dogs. Anyway, so we've also got a little bit of streaming news. This one I totally missed, so this is the reason why we do this podcast, so we can catch up on the news that we missed. There's a one of those adjectives, streaming service called Darkroom, which has added in some anime. They have added in Crusher Joe, Crusher Joe, A Trap of the Frozen Jail, Crusher Joe, The Final Weapon, Ash, Hari and Gui Deluxe, Hari and Gui Final, and Simone. And I don't know if Simone's ever been streaming, actually, because that one has been on my to-watch list for ages, and I think it's only ever been on DVD. And that was...
I wanted to say this was originally... It used to stream on Hulu eons ago. Mind you, that was eons ago. Obviously, it's no longer Hulu, but because it was on my long to watch list for a long time too. I just never got around to watching it.
Yeah, because that was an old Bandai title, I think. So never got it put out on Blu-ray either. So I'm going to be going checking that out later, at some point. I'd like to say right now, but the summer season is kind of big. So as we're going to talk about in just a moment.
We have Hiro Okamura's farming manga, not that farming manga from Hiro Okamura.
The autobiographical Hakusho, one.
Yes, the autobiographical one. Hayakusho Kizuko, The Farmer's Days, is now on Retro Crush. Just to be clear, I think this is also streaming on RemNow.
Streamed somewhere before, because I made like a same comment. On Blue Sky, and someone corrected me.
Was it again?
I think it has been streaming somewhere else before, because I made the same comment and someone on Blue Sky corrected me.
Okay, gotcha. So it should be on the It's Anime channel. But now we have another place you can watch this the anime. And then we also have five... I should have counted how many zeros it is. Let's just say it's a lot of years, button is now... I can't math, apparently, it turns out. and I put this in the script. But yeah, that's now a rush request, so that's two anime now on the service. And then a final bit of streaming news, which is live action, actually. Junji Ito HBO Max is apparently a thing. And also, apparently, this is also announced at Anime Expo. I guess it was on the last day of Anime Expo. That's probably why we didn't talk about it last time. But Strange, Junji Ito Tales for Sleepless Nights, is going to stream on HBO Max service internationally this fall. Yes, more Junji Ito. It is coming. Yay, for those who want horror on HBO Max.
Oh man, it was so funny. In one of my group chats a couple months ago, someone had somehow missed all of the news about the Uzumaki anime. Just like completely missed all of that. And so they were like, why didn't I hear anyone talking about it? We're like, oh man, because it got real bad from the second episode onwards. It was honestly kind of delightful, you know, to be like, oh, we get to tell you the whole saga then. All right, so I believe it is time for our Summer Anime 2026 First Impressions. And as has been characteristic of the past year, Justin has way more than me. I was making jokes before we started about Justin not having a social life, and he was like, well, yes, but... So that is part of my defense. I actually go out and do things after work. I've also just had kind of a weird work schedule the past couple of weeks, which has not been very conducive for anime watching.
Yeah, very... Well, you know, we are called the anti-social geniuses, so what can I tell you?
Listen, when I go out after work, I am going out by myself. Like, I am going to the theater by myself. I'm going to, like, after-hours museum exhibits by myself. So, I have a social life with myself.
But yes, Helen is, she's missing out.
There's like a half dozen shows I still want to watch and I desperately need to find time to get around to. Trust me, I know I am missing out.
the big problem, however, is because the season is just so packed with some stuff I that are really good, there are some shows I just have to say, I can't do it. No. Good. I'm going to admire you from afar. So running on a list of shows, I'm just going to be like, do your thing, people. Do your thing. So Goodbye Lara, I think it's like Little Mermaid type of thing, but obviously obviously not the same, so twist on it on the Little Mermaid.
They are saying possibly Yuri, and there definitely seems to be some boxing involved.
That's okay. That's weird. What is happening? I don't remember boxing my Little Mermaid. What's happening here?
You're gonna have to watch and find out.
I think it's by studio Kimina Citrus, I believe. It looked interesting. But then I was paring down my list of stuff to watch. I'm like, oh god, can I really make time for this? And I said, yeah, I think I have to punt this for now. Stepsister and Stepsisters on Wicked. I'd be kind of actually interested in the manga at some point, and I'm not going to say I won't watch this at some point, but not anytime soon. I mean, it just seems like, oh, it's a spin on the Cinderella trope. Oh, wait. The Stepsisters aren't weird and wicked, or mean and wicked, I should say. I heard it like kind of has a one joke, but I'm like, okay, I watched 2 Sons with Torture Princess. I mean, that knows how to run a joke to the one thing about torture. I can probably deal with this too. But yeah, I think it's just too much of an overload season. So I'm passing on that for now, at least. Ghost in the Shell, the new version of it. Looks interesting.
The one that kept the lesbian orgy on a boat in there, apparently. The one that's not even been in all of the English language manga releases.
That's actually pretty interesting.
One of the dogs sat up and looked at me when I said that.
What does that say about the dog?
I don't know, because she's not very smart. This is not the smart dog. The smart dog is outside currently.
And then Magnum and Magical Girl Season 2, which I obviously love the manga a lot. I've been buying the print version of that when I can. Obviously, Season 2 is happening, but I have obviously watched Season 1. And these two, Ghost in the Shell and Magnum Mare, I haven't watched because they're Amazon Prime. So I'm principle of just not watching. I don't have a Prime account. I don't really feel like getting one, so just by default, not watching that. I Want to Love You Until Your Dying Day. Another Yuri. It looks pretty violent and bloody. Yay!
But yeah, I looked at the premise for that and I went, it's Gunslinger Girl?
but I think I'm going to stick my one Yuri that involves fighting games this season, and then also, again, Overloaded season. I maybe in the future, I won't obviously turn it down, but or we'll see if it actually obviously holds up, like most things, but yeah, I just had to turn it down. I think this the one that I'm going to talk about is the toughest one that I'm watching right now, Tanya the Saga of Evil Season 2. The big issue turns out, one, it's been eons since I actually watched Season 1, because it took forever for it to actually air, for Season 2 to air. I don't know if we wanted a production delay or whatnot, but it's one of the rare cases where I think it also ran into the whole, yeah, sometimes being delayed so long can actually impact whether you want to watch a show or not. That's one thing. But then also the other thing, I think there's a movie that came out in that time period that similar like Goblin Slayer, you got to actually watch that movie. And I'm like, okay, I gotta watch the movie at some point, but I don't really have to decide to watch it right now. So I'm a ways away from wanting to watch it. I will watch, maybe I'll watch, get back to season two or watch the season eventually, but it's not happening. Then the final one that's on my mind right far, for now at least, is Cleaver Test Season 2. I say for now because I actually finally started the Season 1 this week, this past week. I watched the...
Wait, I thought you would watch Season 1.
No, did not even come close to watching Season 1. I heard
I definitely liked it,
about it that but... I eventually added to my list, but I just didn't make time for it, and I was hoping to make time for it in the spring season. That didn't happen. This is also why I've just had to shun most other animated season, because I just want to watch, I want to try to catch up to this at some point. But I watched the Extend the Odyssey episode, and I'm up to season, or episode 4. I need to watch episode 5. But yes, I'm enjoying it. Definitely is that dark, or scratching that little dark fantasy itch where it goes far enough, or not, or I guess it goes to that balance between not going far enough, but then going into that right balance of dark fantasy. That it's not just super gross or anything like that. Obviously, I love my... how can you love a girl who can't, who just simply cannot die? And you gotta enjoy taking care of this baby for... Just one really powerful demon just wants to take care of this baby. Because one person just said, yes, you should take care, you should do it. This human just has... This baby has potential. This baby is also royalty. That's a thing to note later on. So there's some intriguing things I like about it. So I'm enjoying what I've watched so far. But yes, I have some more episodes to go. I do want to try to catch up to it this week, but I will not pressure myself to saying I'll catch up this week. But hopefully I'll just at least finish season 1 this month, and then I won't be too long before I catch up season 2. So that's my shows I'm admiring from afar.
And it's funny, because I actually am watching two of those, so I could talk about them now, but I feel like I should let you just keep going, since you've got more shows than me to talk about.
I need at least a little break here. At least, like, help me break up something.
Okay, so, Amazon offered me a week of Prime when I needed to ship something, so I said sure, so I watched 2 episodes of Magilumiere, and I found you can do offline watching on the Amazon app. You know, you download something, so we're gonna see if that still works, but I simply do not connect my laptop. My iPad to the internet. We will see if that works with some other things I downloaded. But that means I got to see 2 episodes of Magilumiere Season 2. And the good news is that so far it looks better than Season 1, since that looked real rough in spots. And it was reminding me that, God, I really fucking love this series. It's just, it's adult working magical girls. You know, it's that one thing that people have said for years that they really want, and that they totally ignore when it actually happens. And the discussions and debates and the general plot, you know, you could map it onto so many real world issues. Like, at the central concept of it is that there's kind of a debate with bigger monsters are appearing, so we need to use more magic to defeat them. But we have indications from historic trends going back to the Middle Ages that the monsters are becoming bigger because we are using more energy. which you could equate with like an environmental concern or like the growth of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Although I will say, from having read the manga, no, it's just literally fucking capitalism. Capitalism is quite literally the final boss in the manga. It's great. There is a point where the manga has a time skip and starts a different arc, and I think the material in this season is going to cover right up to the end of that, which is interesting. It's what I would expect anyway, since that's kind of a good stopping point. But I will be kind of bummed if it means we don't get into the really fuck capitalism arc of it. Just, God, I love this series so much. So much.
And then recommended series for sure. Recommended series for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely one of my favorite manga of all time at this point, I think. I think it's in like that top 10. And do you want me to keep going? Should I talk about Clevetus?
You say you have one more show to talk about, or...
Yeah, Clevetus. Since I watched season one, so I'm now watching season two.
Yeah, go ahead.
Alright, so... I remember when I was watching the first season, I was talking about how it's a dark fantasy, and it doesn't feel gratuitous in its use of violence, gore. I don't feel like the characters are sexually imperiled that often, either, honestly. It feels like a natural progression of the setting and the story it is set up, that, of course, in a world where X, Y, and Z are factors, that you're going to have A, B, and C consequences. So it doesn't feel voyeuristic in its grim darkness at times. And it's also not consistently grimdark the entire time. Like, this new season, for various reasons, folks are trying to get their hands on some secret information, which is being hidden in a magic school, so our characters are having to go undercover in a magic school. So, Clevetus has not really had to change how he looks, but... God, I am blanking on our main female character's name. Her. Anyway, she has been made to look smaller and like she is from Haydn, which is funny because she actually looks cute this time instead of her usual badass self, but don't worry, she can still, like, absolutely kick your ass in a fight. So...
I wouldn't mess with a hero like that. No, not mess with her. No.
And it's...
She fell off a freaking bridge and lived to tell the tale.
I mean, to be fair, she is a zombie. And it's funny because two people catch sight of her and one of them's like, this looks like the hero, but it can't be her because that is like a younger person from a different nationality. That's weird. And someone else catches sight of her and is like, that's fucking her. I don't know how, but that is definitely her. Why do I have to keep dealing with this shit? So, again, I'm enjoying it. The writing feels very confident in there, although I don't know if the original mangaka has done much before this. I kind of think this is an earlier work of theirs, but
No, Yuji Iwahara sounds like a familiar name. The quick look, but the name sounds great. I think he did Dimension W, or was that? Am I getting mixed up with somebody else?
Yeah. I don't know, because that one was also god awful. So
the anime, yeah, no. I will tell you this: the manga for that was way better than the anime.
Which is good, because the anime was pretty bad, so if it was even worse than that, you know, that... Talk about your squandered potential of the anime.
Yep, hell, I was right. It was the same creator of Dimension W.
Ah, okay, so that's why...
The manga is so much better.
So, noted that I should be checking out the manga, but that would explain why this feels like, you know, the confident writing of an experienced writer.
Yeah, and he's been writing for a while. Have you heard of King of Thorn?
I've heard of it, but I never read it.
And then you've heard of Darker Than Black, right?
Yes, we were actually having a discussion about that on Blue Sky the other day. We were talking about worst anime ever, and I was talking about that period of time where Bones just made a bunch of god-awful sequels.
Okay, yeah, I have to remember, because I think Darker Black was anime original, so I think...
it was, yeah.
But yeah, Yuji Ohara did the manga for that. So, yeah, as you mentioned, experienced, competent writer, there you go, that's why. So yes, I'm getting hell and change my mind about Dimension W on this episode alone, or this section alone, because of Cleaver Test, and that the anime was just not done very well.
No, it's not changing my mind if you're saying that, like, a different version of it was better than the version I saw. That's two different things. I never said that the manga could not be better.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, time for me to bulldoze my way through all the sequels that is airing this season. And look, these are all something you're either watching already or not. Like Hanakimi Season 2, what? But Justin, they just put the manga on Viz Manga. Just drop the anime and watch the anime. Just drop the anime and read the manga. I mean, it still could. Season 2 doesn't look
And we all know, Justin, you're more of a manga guy at heart than an anime guy.
Yeah.
That wasn't meant as an insult or anything. That was just meant as an honest observation.
But yeah, we are back with the whole cast of characters. And look, I had to at least see Nakatsu realize he might just be gay. Well, maybe he's not because he likes Mizuki, but obviously he's not aware that Mizuki is a girl. But in this case, it's actually, she's a guy. And well, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of gender things happening.
This whole thing stinks of gender.
We have a reporter that's come overseas, and or not overseas, but she's showing up to kind of mess almost everything up. But she has a weakness. Both a doctor, and apparently these two know each other, and she just runs. She literally flees at the mere sight of him. It's kind of funny. I'm kind of curious how the manga handled this, or how the manga is portraying it. But yeah, it's still more of the same than season one. Again, it doesn't look really better visually. So if you have any issues with that or anything like that, or and in general, the premise is just really kind of old. No getting around that. It's just old material. And you obviously think about the whole premise of one high school girl really just decides she loves somebody so much or likes somebody so much. She literally goes across overseas. She literally goes overseas to go to his school and do what?
It's stalk him. Weird,
but hey. It worked somehow. It worked back then. It just
questionable.
Really so, but I'll be. I guess for now, I'm still watching it. We'll see if anything happens moving forward that will give you to like just move on to the manga. Having a much better time with You and I Apollo Opposite Season 2 in terms of visual quality and then just the actual premise itself, where we have the whole high school kids are back from I think it was winter season. Once again, we're going back to Kocha Agasawa back to back to back. Yeah. Went from Rampart's Advice and the drama of that to now these
who are also high school students, to be clear.
But right, they're high school students, but they have some romance drama and everything in that one, which is fine. We just have actual dorks. Or a different type of dorks in You and I Polar Opposites season two. And so we got another it's just another fun one. Just following these characters. I think obviously this at least this past week on Twitter we had like one character Nishi just trending because just how adorable the one scene looked of her. So yeah, just fun stuff. Glad they're back. Glad to obviously it's fine. I think that's when this was originally Manga Plus and I was really enjoying reading it, and now it's just the anime, just people loving it in general, just like yeah this is good, this is the good stuff here.
Join me in enjoying the good stuff.
We have the return of Illusive Samurai Season 2, which aired yesterday. Aired Friday, Helen. It literally just aired a few days ago. What is happening in this season?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because you look at some things and they're like, I'm on like episode 2, and you have stuff like Yumi Mita, which is like, we're on episode 5.
No, wait. Hanakimi Season 2 is episode 4 already. It's already episode 4, and we got Illusive Samurai Season 2 with its first episode Friday. Yes, these kids are back. Simply kids, really old kids. I was just said way back then. I like how the first like they went to like a live action recap of season 2. It's kind of fun. I kind of like that a lot. I thought it was neat. But yes, it's going to be more of the same. More of Yusei Matsui's weirdness and wackiness and everything. will we know what Tokuyuki's fate is? Well, don't Google it. Don't Google Tokuyuki's fate. Don't do it. you don't want to do any of that. This is more or less based off of real historical events. Obviously, Matsui's adding his little spin to it, but it's still mostly based on that. So don't actually Google what's happened to Tokuyuki. but yes, I'm glad that's back. And then we have the madness of 100 Girlfriends Season 3. Somehow it has escalated into a season where we have cousins and we have the whole Japanese, how this cousin things happen. How, Helen? How? I know this is a happy anime, but you're really and Ren told me this joke about production committee. Are you serious? are you serious, production committee? Why are we going this far?
Have we gotten to the point where there's like multiple people in one family who all like the same guy? Because I heard about that part.
Say it again.
I heard from people there is a point where there are multiple people in one family who like the guy. Have you gotten to that yet?
As far as I know, it's one family member.
Okay. Okay, that will be. I don't know if that's going to happen in this season or not, but someone was telling me about that.
It's already happened now. We have the cousin who is now Rento's girlfriend.
No. I mean, like,
I don't know if this.
No. I mean, like, two people in like a different family who both really, really love him.
Okay, based on the based on what they've done so far, like the very first episode kind of reveals the girlfriends that he's going to get with. They didn't. As far as I know, specify.
Okay. It doesn't look like it. It sounds like you have not hit what I was told about. So you have something to look forward to in the future.
Yeah, maybe it's happening this season. I don't know yet. I don't know. Maybe it's happening in future seasons if they get more future seasons. But excuse me. But yes, it's still a questionable watch. Like I think we obviously it's again it's more like. Haha, humor, laughing, but it's still the premise. It's not for everybody. It's just not. You're gonna take it or leave it. I'm still with it somehow, some way. Just how I'm still somehow with it with Mushoku Tensei Season 3, still trucking on, but for some reason the first episode start with Eris, who has been missing from the narrative for like a good season. She was not even, I don't think she was even much or mentioned much in season two, but the first episode started with her. And she's like, I must get stronger for Rudeus. I must be able to beat that freaking Orsted person who's just stupidly strong. And the first episode just followed her and her just really destroying people, essentially. She does get her butt kicked at one point, though, by like a master, but that is to be expected. He is a master. But yes, the whole trio is back, or really, just Rudeus and his harem is back. What's gonna happen this season? I have no clue. Supposedly, I guess this is where again things go down. But I'm like, didn't y'all say that in season two? Okay, more things go down. Okay, I'll take your word for it if you say so. We'll see. As always, once again, if it looks as visually as it does. The press couple seasons, or at least it's season one, then I guess it'll still be a good time. I think we'll see.
Okay, so should I just start talking about other things I've watched? You know,
yep, just one more thing. Yep,
okay, so let's see. I'm trying to look at your things so I can do one that you haven't. Well, I already mentioned it, so. The latest Bang Dream installment, which is Bang Dream Yumi Mita, I think that's how you pronounce it, written out, there is an infinity sign in between Yumi and Mita. You know, it's kind of funny. In Maigo, it takes them, like, half the show, basically, to form the band. In Ave Mujica, they form the band within, like, the first episode. In this one, the band has already been formed before the start of the first episode. And frankly, I would like to go back and find out a little bit more about how all these people agreed to be in a band. Because it sounds like at least two of them, maybe three of them, of the four, did not read their contracts. And so I'm kind of wondering, what were you guys signing with this agency if not to sign up for a band? And the premise of this one is that, once again, I think we've moved slightly further down. I think that all of these have been occurring chronologically, but it's the same universe as all of the other previous Bang Dream installments. And our new band of girls are a virtual band. So right now they are kind of getting together in a VR space, although at least three of them have realized that they go to school together. And they have met before, but actually in real life, but I don't think they've realized that yet. And like every other Bang Dream installment that I've watched, the series once again posits, how can we have just a really fucked up girl gang dynamic? Just fucked up in different ways every single time. And in this time, we've got the former friend of one of the bandmates who's still in their former band, and oh man, there's something wrong with the leader of that group, just something inherently wrong. You would need like a whole team of therapists to sort that out. And yeah, it's kind of funny because this one has more episodes out than anything else I'm watching right now, because I think it started with a double episode premiere. So it kind of feels like it's still getting going, but at the same time, we are like halfway through its run at this point. So I don't know if it's actually gonna be able to tell the whole story it wants to in just one core. I wonder if this one might be less ambitious than I'm thinking its story is going to be, or if it might actually require a longer runtime. But yeah, like, I don't like the characters as much here as I did in Maigo. I also didn't like the Abe Mujica characters as much as I did in Maigo, but at least then I could see the vision and respect what the creators were going for. Here, I just find their voices a little too shrill. And I also think that whenever you design characters who have both a real-world appearance and a virtual, VTuber appearance, I think that if you design their VTuber and their real-world self to look much like each other, you are a coward as a designer. Like, I shake my head at you. But I'm gonna stick around with it. It's, at the very least, it is good background watching when I'm knitting or sewing, because oh boy, there's a lot of sewing in my near future because Otakon is in 2 weeks.
All right, it is new shows time for me, and I am going to start with the shows that I have either dropped or I basically side-eyeing for at least the whole season with much prejudice because of the quality and how things are adapted. So I gave Helen the spiel about how I ordered my list this time of new stuff or any, or like what's my worst or the best and all that stuff. I accidentally made these two lowercase font, or I shrunk the font for these by accident. And like, you know what? I guess it's distinct enough that I think I'll leave it like that, just in case we overlap anywhere.
Yeah, and I was telling Justin that if I had had time to watch more things, I would have actually put everything in chronological order because there's a surprisingly large number of historical setting anime this season.
Yeah, there was a funny joke on Twitter that had like a whole tweet about that. It was
Yeah, there's
super
like 10
funny.
different shows.
And then, oh, just randomly just so pretty Korean there. Why so pretty? Because 1999, what?
It is. I mean, it canonically is.
It is kind of it is funny like that. But yeah, it's gonna start with Smoking Behind the Supermarket with You, which I've always heard good things about. And we don't get too many, obviously, adult type of romances. Obviously, this was the more notable summer show this season, and I was very much looking forward to it. But then I watched the first two episodes, and I had a decision to just be like, I don't think I can watch any more of this.
And
I was just kind of
it is
bored.
even the better smoking anime of the season.
Yes, I mentioned, I think, a few episodes ago on the podcast that I had checked out Chainsmoker Cat because I read the free preview of it and I was like, okay, it just seems raunchy enough that I think I'll like it. But then I read the whole volume and was like, okay, I don't really think I care about it. So I don't have to watch that. I
Yeah,
should probably read the first volume it is.
I've not watched either of these, but I did read the first volume of Smoking Behind the Supermarket with You for the Manga New Year's podcast, and I saw the trailer for Chainsmoker Cat, and it was like, is she smoking her own shit? I think she literally is. Smoking Behind the Supermarket with You is far more wholesome.
Yes, way it's more wholesome, and yet I find it just kind of boring. It's hard to say. Like I'm watching, like again, it stars like Sasaki, Obviously, an older guy working pretty much at a really bad job, it seems like. Just working as a workaholic. He gets his joy essentially going to the market and talking to the cute cashier. Hey, this was happening. Or, yeah, just say hi. You make my day or stuff like that. Or at least he doesn't say it. But he basically, that's like his little thing. But then he accidentally just wants to smoke, and obviously it then runs into a person that looks also kind of beautiful. Doesn't she seem familiar, though? Does she not seem familiar, though? Apparently Sasaki does not realize that the cashier Yamada is the same as this person called Tayama. How do you not realize it? I have no clue. But the point is, they essentially reach a camaraderie, and it seems enjoyable at first, and it's fine. But I'm watching this, and it's like, I'm not really caring about anything. I don't know if it's the smoking part. I mean, I don't really care for smoking, but I mean, I don't think the whole premise of smoking is enough for me. But I just feel like something is about how they're both interacting with each other is just not clicking for me. And again, maybe in another season I would have kept going with this, but I'm just like, I've watched so much already. I'm dropping you. So that's one drop. The Forsaken Saintess and her foodie world trip in another world. Was gonna be that nice. Okay. Actually, before I actually mention this, I kid you not, I had to literally double check and Google this. I'm like, doesn't JW Club already publish something about an RV?
They do, but no, novel? It's not the same show, because there are, as far as I know, I think there's at least three that I have seen with the same premise, which is somebody can summon a food truck or can summon an RV in another world. Because I have had this exact same thought process, and I was actually surprised. I haven't seen this one yet, because I was like, oh, wait, this is the one that I like that got the anime. Okay. Because I didn't like
the
J-Novel.
Oh, you like this one.
I like this one more than the J-Novel Club, but again, I have not seen the anime version yet. I still need to re-up my High Dive sub. But
yeah, the big problem is, I think this is missing a cat. Which the one that J-Novel Club has.
The J-Novel one did have a cat. However, it was not a very well-drawn cat. In the illustrations, it's just kind of pathetic looking.
That's the illustrator's issue. This is not the writer's issue. The point is, that had a cat. It had RVs and a bunch of stuff. But this anime has all that and not very good visuals. Sorry to say. How can you make the food look unappealing?
Ooh, that is
ow!
Bad.
How can you do this to me? I mean, it's quaint enough. I think, again, in another season, I would have just had this as a thing to watch. And I didn't quite drop it yet. I watched episode 2, and it wasn't terrible. Like, it did get a laugh out of me. So I'm going to watch the episode, see if I actually just want to keep it, and put it into that list of, I think I'll just watch you but side-eye you because of your production issues or production problems or whatever. But what may happen is, if I watch the episode, I think it's a Monday or Tuesday show. Why is Tuesday so loaded this season? Why? But whenever it comes out, if I watch episode 2, I think it's bad, or I just think it's like mediocre enough. What may happen is I may just watch the dub. I know Highlight is going to dub this sometime in August. So if I just think it's okay enough, or if I just think like, they don't think I'll watch it anymore, I might just watch the dub and play in the background. Because it's like, okay, look, it's a girl who got adult woman, I should say, who got isekai'd. She was supposed to be the part of the whole hero, heroine, and saintess, all that stuff. The king's like, no, we got the much more attractive younger chick. We're going to have her. You're going to use her instead. You go out, get kicked out. Get out of here, please. Just go away. Nothing else. Just get out of here. And whatever skill or gift you have, we don't need it. But she can summon an RV. What the hell is wrong with you? Why don't you want the RV?
This also reminds me of in Zom 100, where they're like, let's get an RV, because that is the effective way to travel around the zombie infested Japan.
But yes, so like I said, it's a lighthearted premise, so you really shouldn't be thinking too much about this, especially since Rin is kind of like a head thought, hefty, just going forward, just moving, just, oh, it's a fantasy world, oh, this is nice, oh, there's food, yeah, I gotta cook it up, yeah. But, this is a loaded season. I'm not sure I just want to keep up with this. But again, it'll get its third episode for me to really determine if I want to keep it or not. Those are shows I'm pretty sure I'm not going to watch. We'll see about The Forsaken Saintess. But The Oblivious Saint, it can't contain her power. I will probably keep, but this is another one where I'm just like, it takes its time to really get going, honestly. Because the main crux of it is Caroline Sanchez. great name, by the way. Don't know how you can with Sanchez, but great name. But she's been pretty much overlooked her entire life, essentially, after the loss of her mother. Her sister just really does not like her at all because of this. There's obviously the reasons that she thinks that she's a cause of her mother's death. Did her pregnancy and everything. So basically, in social circles, she's basically nondescript, thought of just as irrelevant, essentially, or very unnotable compared to her sister, who's essentially like the saint in the area, basically. What ends up happening is her father, who is basically useless. How do you not notice what's happening with your family? What's wrong with you? Are you grieving? Are you still like just thinking that, oh, these your girls can push through? Fool. Just stop working and get to actually take care of your family. But anyways, ends up marries a different type of person in a different country, and with some reticence from her father, but the father's just like, okay, you can do what you want. She agrees, so now she leaves, and the whole premise is, why is it called Oblivious Saint? Because she is unaware that she is actually the real reason that her place was actually prospering and not having monsters, and the crops were actually not, like, and the crops were growing. Now that she's left, everything is just kind of going a little wrong. There are more monsters that's showing up in the area. Her sister's wondering, like, why her power is not as good as it is. Meanwhile, it's going passively. It's like she's at this moment, she doesn't really... she doesn't really understand, like, her power is just passive at the moment, that she doesn't really truly understand her power. So I know it's gonna get a little better from here, but it's just that it's obviously really slow. So it's gonna pick up from here. But then you get to Red River. That's really gonna pick up later on. But I have many concerns about the future of this one. First off,
I'm trying to remember, have you read the manga for Red River?
I have.
Okay.
A long time ago, and I've been picking up the manga version of it that Viz is releasing. But yes, I read the manga years ago, and I'm already just seeing the cracks in the production. Not very good. That what you're seeing in episode 2. There's some direction happening, but I'm like, visually, it's just not really working. But there's
I had a friend quipped me on Instagram, like, wow, I did not realize you're going to be following every single panel of the manga that faithfully.
And not look as good, unfortunately. Oh, no. But there is, like, a story about your... And I think, personally, like, it... Sorry, excuse me. And again, what gets to me about the series is just the fact that you have Yuri, and maybe this is obviously more of a common plot point in older isekai, but you obviously get the one girl who just wants to go back home. Like, she literally, like, dropped off into a really long-ago time. Like, she doesn't, like, really... Hittite Empire, like, what? I've been dropped back this far back for what reason? There's so much confusion, and she actually, I feel like, accurately with this, like, this seems like a more like a thought a realistic person would think about, or a 15-year-old girl would think about or act like in an unfamiliar world where she's just not used to anything and literally just had a boyfriend, and now she can't see the boyfriend anymore. I think she's reacting like in a way that makes sense, and then her eventual development is really good. It's just, like, again, take a while to get there.
Yeah, and so I definitely feel like it used to be a lot more common in isekai that the characters would want to go home, especially since I'm thinking of other things like Magic Knight Rare and Escaflowne, where someone's been isekai'd in, you know, body and soul over, so that it's not like they died. You know, they still presumably could go back if there was a way to bring them over. And yeah, I feel like that definitely has been less of a trend here. And that isn't, you know, always... Well, I was going to say it's not always the case of 90s isekai. I was thinking of From Far Away. I was like, no, she actually was vanished physically. Everyone just thinks that she died because of a bomb explosion. But yeah, that's a definite trend that you've noticed there.
Mm-hmm. And I think that personally it works narratively for me. So it makes me want to keep going and see how the anime portrays it. But the one other issue aside from the production is just how many episodes... it's gonna be. Usually you might get like a leak here or there about, oh yeah, what's the episode count for this season? But there's no leak yet. There's no obviously official episode count for this yet. So I'm just like,
Assume 13 episodes until proven otherwise.
Is this going to be like a really short one? I'm concerned.
Yeah, that is always that is always the concern.
You're not gonna do people dirt. This could have gotten an anime eons ago. You didn't get an anime then, and then now all of a sudden you can bring it back and not at least kind of have a good sizable episode count. And you know, like obviously 13 is really bad, and maybe it would be like 24 would be pretty poor too. But I will literally take 20 something. Aside from just 13, like at least let us enjoy it for a bit instead of just being like, oh, the seasonal. We need some seasonal fill out the TV broadcast slots. What can we have here? Oh, let's put this episode with 12, 13. Let's put this series that shoujo fans supposedly like. Let's do that. Put that there for 13 weeks or 12, 13 weeks. Let's do that. I mean, even if it doesn't finish the series, like just knowing that will be like a good amount of episodes will be, I think, enough. Even though, like, I'll have many issues if it just. Has just continuous production issues, or it has like a poor stopping point. So I have issues, but the point is, at least give a chance. So I have concerns about that, but I will probably still watch this because I'm just very curious how far the anime is going to get, and I do want to see Yuri eventually get used to her situation, which not easy, but she obviously will, and very to see how the anime will portray it, even if it's done poorly.
All right, if you would like me to jump back in then. Man, I just don't have too many other things. Like one that I know that I watched and it doesn't look like you did is I've seen the first episode of Sparks of Tomorrow, which is Kyoto Animation's show of the season. I definitely want to watch more episodes. I simply have not had the time to watch more episodes. It's set in like a steampunk alternate history Taisho era Japan. So I guess that kind of makes it the equivalent of like a Victorian steampunk because it's like the same time period, maybe Edwardian. So it looks absolutely gorgeous, as do most Kyoto animation shows do. Stunningly beautifully detailed backgrounds, environments, etc. The characters do go a little goofy at times in ways I wasn't expecting. In like their expressions and movements. I meant to look up some of the staff from this because I was kind of wondering what their past experience was, because some of it almost reminded me a little bit of like the clips I've seen from like the daily shows in Japan that don't get brought over as much, like Osumatsu, Sazae-san, stuff like that. It reminded me a little bit of that, but I don't know if there's any staff overlap or not. Again, meant to look it up, but I have been busy the past couple of weeks. I don't know if it's going to end up being a favorite of mine, since I wasn't quite clicking with the characters as of the first episode. There's definitely some intriguing mysteries underneath the surface. Well, they're at the surface, not under the surface. We've got one character whose brother seems to have vanished. It's not entirely clear if he is like went to war and was never seen from again and declared dead, or if he's just sort of out there. And we've got a girl whose sister seems to have had some connection to him, and her sister is being pursued by this real weirdo who's interested in what she might physically possess from this other guy. So I am curious where it's gonna go. But the characters didn't super endear themselves to me after one episode, so that's why I'm thinking, I might watch this, but it might not be a favorite of mine this year. Also, let's be real, this year has a surprisingly large number of really strong shows, so for once I'm actually gonna have trouble making like my top five anime of the year list.
Yeah, I'm about to run through some more shows that I'm really, really enjoying in various ways. They're kind of essentially in that same bracket. I guess I would say Young Ladies Can't Play Fighting Games is a little lower. I feel like it's not as enjoyable as when I read the manga years ago. But I want to, first of all, I want to point out the long production history of this. This was supposed to get an anime like years ago. Like this was announced a while ago, but it was just radio silent. For like years, just like nothing. There was nowhere. What happened? Did something happen? Production? Did the studio change? Whatever. Nobody knows. But then all of a sudden, they got word happened, and then, oh yeah, we're gonna come out with Young Lady Still Playing Games. And then it got delayed again. No, what happened? Then you watch the trailer, like, is that Street Fighter 6?
I did see some people quipping on Twitter that the problem with using like actual footage from a video game is that you're gonna have like viewers who are familiar with the video game being like, nah, I could have done that, or nah, that wouldn't work like that. I saw someone proposing what you really needed to do is you need to get a bunch of really good players and screen record like 200 hours of them playing and then just like use those clips as needed. They're like, that's what they really should have done to make that part as believable as possible.
Well, yeah, and the other issue is it was just obviously created in a time where that Street Fighter 6 wasn't even thought about. At that point, it was like Street Fighter 4 or Street Fighter 5 at that point. I think it was Street Fighter 4 when this was around the time when the manga created.
And are you saying that Street Fighter 4 was a superior game to 6?
No, I mean, I wouldn't know. I haven't played the Street Fighter past Street Fighter 4. But again, it's just based off it, or at least like it mimics some things. Ultimately, it's called Iron Senpai 4. We don't get Iron Senpai 4 in this one. We're not getting that. We have a deal with Capcom. We're going to use it to our advantage. Boom.
So Iron Senpai sounds like it's like an all-girls school fighting game or something like that.
Ah, you say all-girls school fighting game. Well, look at that. This is you follow two characters in an all-girls school. So yes, we got.
No, no. It sounds like the game they are, the fighting game they are playing is set in an all-girls school. That's what I meant. Like layers.
Understood. But yes, in case the title didn't say anything, yes, we're in an all-girls school. We're following Mitsuki, who's just trying to not show off her fighting game history. She just is hiding that forever. Nobody needs to know her gaming, and then now she's in a really strict school, so like, who needs to know that? But there's this one really popular lady. She's known as the White Lily, and little does anybody except her know, as she accidentally ran into her while she was playing a fighting game in the school. Yes, the White Lily, Mio, she's really into like playing Street Fighter 6.
And in case anybody's wondering, yes, this does sound a lot like A Rock is a Lady's Modesty. I believe that manga started coming out afterwards, and some people have said, yeah, the anime cribbed a little.
I think there's been even another young girl's school doing something different before this came out, before this manga came out. So we had like at least two anime come out before this one. This is what I think the delay also kind of hurts it too. Because it's like, okay, this is conceptually the same type of premise, just with a new twist.
And you gotta go, no, but this was the OG.
Yeah, you gotta go with that, right? But I still have fun with it. Again, it's again video games. And then in this case, we got two girls who like each other at least a little bit. Maybe. Are they friends? I think they're more just friends. But we'll see how it goes over time. And obviously, you're going to have more cast of characters going to change everything up. So I'm still looking forward to it. I think it'll get better from here on. So I'm still going to be obviously watching this. Victoria of Many Faces, which I bought the light novel of this a while ago, and I still haven't gotten around to reading it. So, of course, watching the anime, it's like, yeah, I got to read the light novel at some point. It's a fun one. Excuse me. It stars a character in Victoria who is just trying to escape her original life as a spy. Excuse me. She ends up obviously leaving that past behind, but now she's having to remake her character into somebody else. She ends up taking in a little kid named Nana, who's just left randomly by her mom, by I guess her family. I think it was her mom. She didn't obviously come back to pick her up, so Victoria just took her in. It's kind of like this. Okay. Former spy trying to make a new life ends up now bringing a kid, and we're kind of watching that dynamic. We also have a military man who shows up at the same time. There's a quality that I kind of like. It's working for me in the sense that we have these characters essentially trying to make new lives for each other. I am very curious if the spy family, because they're obviously teasing it, so at some point where they show up to really find Victoria, where we see if we'll actually see the mom for Nana. Lots of questions, but I'm curious. I'm very intrigued about where he's going, so I'm definitely having a good time with that. Let's see. Draw this, then die. It speaks to that doujinshi manga spirit. And then once they reference all the manga in the first episode, yes, that's it. You hooked me. I am good. Good enough. It's kind of in an out of way. I won't say quite out of the way, but it's when you get the coastal type of areas and islands and everything like that. It's like, oh yeah, we have this school here, but we're following one character who's just really in the manga or got into manga specifically from one creator. And it's one creator. It's coming back with one of the new titles. It's going to be a doujinshi event. And she shouldn't be going to this to Comic Con, but she goes to it anyways. And what does she find out when she goes there? She meets her teacher. What? not just any teacher. The teacher's been saying, no, manga is not good for you. Stop. It won't lead you. It'll lead you astray. All that stuff. As it turned out, the same creator is the one who's been telling you off to just say manga is bad. So yes, there's lots of history going on there. Why did Sensei become like that? Why is she dissuading her from doing this? Well, it's that dynamic that really works for me. So we have this. They're gonna. I watched up the first two episodes. They don't work at the manga. I think three episodes. Should be three episodes now. They're working on to a manga club right now, so that's gonna get started. So I'm very curious how the three characters, especially the two girls that showed up in the anime so far, how they're gonna develop, and then obviously how much will their sensei help them out. Very curious. Blame to that. I cut this out because the longer title. I'm just keeping it simple. A little bit later, get to getting even. We're following Elizabeth, who was treated essentially like, well, I'm not going to say trash. I'm going to say the people around her were basically taking her for granted. She's basically knows everything. Like, she basically essentially is running the kingdom. And there are some people who obviously praise her and everything. But behind the scenes, we have people who take it for granted, but in this case the prince especially has no idea of her value, just doesn't care at all, and her father is just like, I'm a service to the kingdom, only the kingdom matters essentially, so whatever she wants to do, as long as in the kingdom, a service to the kingdom, it is what it is. We have an incident where we have the whole, you gotta bring her in public, the prince is like, I love this person better or a little more, I'm bringing over you, Elizabeth, and then Elizabeth gets thrown in jail. In a twist in the whole, okay, the villainess just decides we're going to get even. Instead, the maid, her loyal maid, says, aren't you angry at this whole kingdom not taking you for granted like this? Why aren't you getting angry about this? This is it. This should be enough for you. Elizabeth agrees. So now she begins to plot her revenge. The revenge is very slow.
I'm trying to remember, does Jay Novel Club have this series?
They do.
Okay, I think I have read a little bit of it and went peace. So
yeah, because yeah, it. First of all, did you?
It just seemed very mean spirited and not the kind of tone I wanted when I was reading it.
Especially towards the end, or close to the end of Volume One, it gets.
Yeah, I think I'd been reading some of the manga, and then someone posted in the forums, "Hey, this is how the first volume ends," and it was like, "All right, then, no."
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, first of all, I read the bit of the manga, and I didn't like the art for it, so I ended up kind of giving up on that. And then I pretty much read the light novel of it, and I'm like, dang! I mean, I know he was kind of a jerk, and you know what's funny enough?
That guy was excessive!
That guy who kind of, because of a jerk in the anime, really drives home how much of a jerk he actually is. Like, he's just kind of continues to the prince like that, but yeah, in the first volume, it gets places. I'm like, dang. Holy crap. I guess for ladies, they get to enjoy this type of violence or revenge like that too, I guess. I don't know. So I obviously tread with caution with this one. It definitely is, at the end of the first volume, definitely something that you're like, oh, wait, this might be a little problematic. There is like a later plot point where it gets more explored into her psyche. But that's unfortunately like a couple of volumes away from that, so it's gonna take a while. But yeah, Shimaru's are very on the anime is in the light novel especially. But for now, it's pretty solid. Again, it's taking its time with revenge. Because it's like, okay, she's not in the kingdom anymore. She's now somewhere else. So she's got to build up to wanting to actually get back at the kingdom for how they treated her. So, but you already see the kind of the signs of her being like, not good. But you're saying she's just selling soap. Okay. Oh, she's also leaking the, or intentionally leaking part of the soap product to her opponent. And then the opponent decides, yes, it's going to work just exactly like that. Not thinking that, oh yeah, it's going to be like exactly one-to-one and that she's not hiding anything else and that it's not going to hurt people. Okay, now we see why she's like this. Now we see why. Oh no.
Yeah, you got to be careful with like the lie used in making soaps, especially some historic soaps, because yeah, that shit will burn your skin.
Mm-hmm. But she essentially allowed that to happen because she eventually is trying to set her business up. And she's obviously using somebody that's foolish enough and actually not very good himself, but still using him for her own ends. And it doesn't seem to matter who's getting involved in it. Because obviously still people buck.
This is not an OSHA-approved revenge.
Yeah. but yes, I guess I'm here for this. And then I get the final... Chumps, basically a joy I'm liking a lot also is Kaijuo Caramelize, which I read the manga this eons ago. And I've been meaning to read the manga this again. I picked back the manga up. I just haven't gotten around to it. But yes, we have our lovely young girl who is just like, oh, I can't get, I have a thing. I can't really love anybody like this. I just can't do this.
You're making her sound too nice. She is, like, actively begrudging all of, like, the normies and everything.
but she just, obviously, she's begrudging because she just, like, she obviously
she
is not.
She is slightly more incel about it.
Yes. but yes, there's a reason why her mom is just like, and by the way, why is her mom so hot? Why?
Listen, Justin, some of us have friends whose moms had them at 16. Maybe that was not so much a thing in your Catholic high school, but it was a thing in my Catholic high school.
but the main point is she basically has to basically not be with people. She has to avoid her classmates, but then she obviously gets involved with the most popular boy in the school or in her class. That's usually not a good thing because that guy has people who likes him a lot. At one point they end up meeting each other, and then there's a couple classmates that see her and they'd be like, ew, why are you with him? Why? And the guy's just like, no, you're supposed to be with me. She is really just like, wait, no, this is too good for me. And she's
because you
growing.
See, when she gets the Doki Dokis, she turns into a monster. And we're not talking about like the metaphorical puberty monster, we're talking Godzilla. Legally distinct Godzilla.
Harugan. We'll call it Harugan, right?
Yeah, it was funny because during the A&N trailer watch party, when that popped up, someone in the chat was like, you know, I hope there's going to be like a Mothra-type monster too or something like that. And it's like, there's not, but there is a definite like Mothra fangirl. So that's very fun.
Yes. So I think the only thing to add before, if you want to talk about... catch you go a little bit more is the fact that yes, it works in the fact that it takes obviously the shoujo type of tropes or themes and everything, but then it puts a little spin up by adding a kaiju. You can't go by a kaiju in your work, right?
Especially when you can actually draw it. Like speaking about the manga, like like yeah, it actually looks pretty well drawn and everything. let's see.
And I think it also looks pretty good too. So. Helen, add more thoughts to Kaiju Girl if you would like.
First off, I'm still kind of annoyed that at Otakon in a couple of weeks we're going to have, like, I think like the director and the producer there as guests. But a friend pointed out to me that at the exact same weekend, there's a convention in Germany that has the original mangaka as a guest. And I'm like, why? I want that guest. I want to, you know, see the mangaka. That sounds even cooler as a guest. So I'm kind of bummed about that. And that's because I've actually enjoyed this creator's other series, and I really like her little notes and comments in the afterword, where she's mentioning things like, should I tone down the shoujo? And her editors are like, nah, keep it. It works. It's good. Just keep going. Or she has like a note at one point that she had just posted the whole first chapter of the manga onto Twitter, and that really made it take off. This was like the first time she's ever had a volume even reprinted. And I just think it's so cute, you know, that she's gone from having no volumes ever reprinted of her works to one of them getting an anime, and one that looks pretty good. It's got the right legally distinct from Godzilla musical cues. It is embracing, you know, the shoujo aspects of it, even though, if I remember correctly, it does run in a shonen magazine.
Seinen magazine.
Okay, yeah, so seinen, anything goes as seinen. Yeah, this one is really fun, and I definitely recommend the manga as well. At this point, I feel like you could just pick and choose if you prefer manga or if you prefer anime, which one to go with. But both are very fun so far. I'm a little curious about where they're going to end the anime, since the manga hasn't really had any good stopping points so far. And it's even been on a couple of hiatuses. I would not be surprised if those hiatuses were because the manga club was busy with the anime production. That's something that often occurs. So yeah, I am kind of curious where they're going to wrap up this season, because there's definitely too many volumes to cover it all, and it's still ongoing. But unlike some other shows on this list, like Red River, I'm going to be concerned about that later. For the moment, I am being distracted well enough to go, sure, let's go for it.
All right, Helen, it's time. It is time for me to gush all about the three shows that got the trifecta. It has been bolded, underlined, and italicized on my script.
And two of them are on my to-watch list I have not gotten to yet.
These are, and especially with two of these, I've been looking for these a lot. I'm going to start with the one that...
one of them you could say you've been looking forward to for decades.
You're right about that. But the one I'm going to start with, these are all in whatever order of best you want it. These are, I think, the standouts for me this season in terms of new shows. But I'm going to start with the one that I've obviously heard good things about from afar, but I just haven't gotten around to reading the manga of this at all. Young Press is putting out as the Witch is like a Mongo, but for the anime, it's called Jagdugar, a Witch in Mongolia. This is a great one. It's set in the early 13th century. We're following Sitara at the time, who is sold as a slave to a family of scholars. And then it's interesting how you sell the culture, especially at those times, about slavery and everything. And just like, dang. Really was like that back then. It seems to be set up into a situation where, okay, she's going to obviously try to either learn her way in there, or she's going to actually either do something during her time. But then episode 2 happens, and by the way, this is another double episode premiere. Like, we had a lot of that this summer season. I know it's been going up, or I know it's been like double premieres been happening over the past couple of years, but I feel like it really went up a lot this summer season for some reason. But yeah, life changes because this is obviously based off historical events. So by the way, don't Google Sitara or Fatima. Don't Google any of that.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, if people know anything about the Mongols from like the Middle Ages, we know that they liked invading things. Years and years ago, I was watching the Crash Course History. I think it was like the World History videos. And so they'd be talking about various times of world history. They'd be like, and no one has done this except the Mongols, and they had a little Mongol montage that they would play every time of like the Mongols coming over a hill riding horses. And so so to this day, that is still what I think of when I think of the Mongols. I just think of like that little gag.
Right. But yes, everything changes for Sitara in episode 2. So life that she knew it has been essentially turned upside down because of due to the invasion. She basically has to essentially change how she moves her life forward. This eventually leads to her taking the name Fatima. Not going to say how she takes it, but if you watch it, you'll understand. But yes, throughout the first 4 episodes, it's just been it's just been so refreshing a little bit to watch just how everything's depicted, just how the visuals, they just stand out particularly. I'm looking at some of the like the manga artwork and how do you translate that? And I think Sanrio really they did a really good job just formatting it in a way that is appealing, but it doesn't really shy away to the tragedy of it all. Like you still get to see a bit of the violence, and especially episode two, like they really go out with the blood for the one particular scene. So from that perspective, it works. And then obviously you're trying to do culture as best as you can. It's obviously trying to honor or be as accurate as possible to the Mongolian culture and just that century of culture in general. And I think it's doing a really good job so far. So yes, this is really good. This is a really good one. Obviously a very serious work. I'm very curious what's the future of Fatima, what she's going to be able to do, if she's able to get her revenge, essentially. Definitely one of the must watches of the season. Definitely, it's also have a dub two just dropped yesterday. Go watch it. Should be a good. Obviously, we always get into that whole. Well, I obviously hope it gets a nice ending and everything, but it is still ongoing material. So, I would say second ways to go to that. But I think from a start of the season thing, I think this is worth a watch. So go check this one out. Then we get to Iron Walk John,
Oh, I did want to
Ellen.
say one last thing about the Mongols is that there wasn't even a single Mongol invasion. Like, there were a whole bunch
They're all whole, yes.
of there were a whole bunch of various nomadic horse riding cultures from that area of the world. So kind of like the Tibetan steppes. And there, I'd listened to like an entire audiobook about the history of how there's been like multiple waves of that group of people just moving east, no, moving west or moving south, invading and taking over. Like, if you've ever wondered about the name Hungary in Europe, that is because it is literally settled by the Huns, the people you also heard about in like Mulan, and that is how we got the name like Hungary out of it. It is a distinctish culture from like the surrounding European cultures. So, as always, I am highly recommending people read Real History, not because it is better, but because, oh boy, our history as a, species of people has been real weird at times. But anyway, move on
And
to Iron
funny you
Walk
bring
John.
no, before I did that, actually, before you bring it out, they did kind of hint to that about there just being so many invasions, but there's almost like a nonchalance to it because of how often it happens. So yeah, that does get brought up a bit in the anime,
Oh, look who it is
but.
again, the fucking Mongols.
But yes, getting into Iron Walk John.
It was so funny. I posted like a screen cap of that in one of my Discords, and some people were like, "What the fuck do you mean Iron Walk John got an anime adaptation?" I was like, "Yeah, it's airing right now, even."
Red River and Iron Walk John airing in the same season. What kind of nonsense is, how is this even possible?
Listen, the world
But
hasn't been right since 2012. I think we've agreed on this.
For Red River's sake, it doesn't look like it's got the best adaption. The opposite has happened for Iron Walk John. I do have the same concerns as Red River. There has been no like stated episode count. This is based off, I think, a 27 or 28 volume manga series. So there's no stated like end point is a little concerning. Is pretty concerning. But even if we get like unlike Red River, if we get like 12 every episode, I'll be satisfied with what we got so far, because you could literally feel like the passion and the attention to detail for behind the production. You literally sense it, and then from its visuals to the actual food being shown, and this is also why Sanctus is on danger of getting dropped, because the food just looks unappetizing, and you put it next to Iron Walk John, and it's just like. What level of Satis, whatever level of Satis is at, is nowhere in the level of Iron Walk John. It's just not even close. Don't even put it in the same stratosphere. But yes, to sum it up, and just in case this miss, it is another Iron Walk John is another manga that was created eons ago, early 90s.
Yeah, i.e. the 90s.
Did not get an anime at that period, and it ended. It was that long thing where I just read the manga of it at the like conventions. I didn't get a chance to pick it at the time. I couldn't pick it because I just didn't have that much money. And then again, I think it had like because the manga used to be published in English, but it had the issue of now that it's out of print, you just have miscellaneous volumes everywhere. So I don't think I could have gotten the complete like set at the time either. So between like obviously you didn't have money, and then it wasn't all at once. It was a case, and actually funny enough, I don't know if CMS ever finished the series. Now I think about it, I didn't check, but I don't think they even finished
the series. I'm gonna look it up for you.
But yeah, it was a case where I just didn't really pick it up. But what I read of it when at the convention was glorious. Just start this really cocky, crazy kid named John, who is just like super arrogant. Just shows up at a really prestigious Chinese restaurant, Kobancho, and says, "No, I can kick all your butts in cooking. I can just do it." You have Kiriko, who's obviously there, and she knows her stuff too. Just at the moment, John just like so immersed and just so much desire to be better at cooking that he's just like, "I'm gonna be kicking your butt even more than you. I'm just gonna do it.
I'm gonna be king of the kitchen."
Basically, why are you like this, Jan? Why are you like this? You see his grandfather. You meet his grandfather. The past few episodes, you get to meet his grandpa. You made this mistake while cooking. I'm gonna burn you. I'm gonna let you burn while you're cooking next to that steamer. Like you do that.
I also love just from the screenshots I've seen. It's like, man, they just let you. You used to be able to just make a main character who looked like anything. This kind of design would not pass muster these days. He doesn't look bad, but it's a very distinctive, you know, very exaggerated, stylized appearance that just would not fly with today's readers. Today's readers would not be able to handle it.
And that is also why at the end of the how do you at the end of the episode be like, look at this amazing manga that's finally getting an anime. This is how great it is. We're adapting it now. Oh, by the way, we are not intended to be offensive to anything, but this was made back in 1995. Please note that.
Yeah, I think I saw like a screen cap of that, which was like, this series was made in 1995. It may not be suitable for modern readers. According to Wikipedia, the manga was licensed in English by Comics One before it was transferred to Drymaster, Master,
not CMX.
Yeah, collectively they did publish all 27 volumes in a 5-year period.
Oh, wait, said it again?
To all 27 volumes in English between December 15, 2002 and December 28, 2007. So they published all, they must have been doing like 5 volumes a year to do that.
Okay. And
that is also kind of insane, frankly.
That is kind of insane.
Especially for like 2004.
While they had the economy going down. Yeah. Oh, wait, no. The economy was
going down. No, the economy didn't go down for another year. That was the problem. They finished publishing Iron Walk John, and clearly that was holding up the U.S. economy, and then it just cratered afterwards.
Right, yeah. And I keep saying CMS, I meant CMX.
Yeah.
Thinking the DC thing. But yeah, I got the all wrong. Sorry, Dr. Master. I'm very sorry. But okay, so it did get released all in English, but yeah, I don't think I saw all the volumes in the convention center when I was reading it. So yeah, I only had that as my reference. So watching it right now, it's just glorious, and it's getting a good adaption right now. Is as crazy
I think I saw some I people describe it as Baki, but food manga.
It is the progenitor. Like we had Food Wars, we had like Baki, and there was one other anime I want to kind of reference. I can't remember off the top of my head. That could have also been an inspiration for the precursor or inspiration from Iron Walk John. But yes, this was the first one. This was very much the one, and it's getting adapted now. And it still carries that trait that I don't think can be replicated, and it's working for me right now. I think it's even working for me even more than in anime form than manga form, but at the same time, I haven't read the manga in like forever. So, yes, it is glorious. The food is gorgeous. You cannot watch the show with an empty. You have to eat something before you watch the show. If you watch with an empty stomach, your stomach will be growling. You'll be cranky. You'll be miserable. You'll be thinking, why didn't I eat something before watching this show? Look at how they cooked that quail. Look at how they cooked that. By the way, I go back to the offending part. I wouldn't say anything that's like totally offensive has happened. I kind of like that they have, and I kind of wish more, especially their older shows do this more often, just like have like a short statement saying this is obviously at that during the time, we don't want like a minor adjustment, because I think at some times you want to make adjustments to certain things, but I think it kind of screw things up a little bit in a way, because you're changing stuff to make it more accurate or more updated, but I think at the same time you're trying to update something that's older in a way that doesn't sometimes work.
Okay, so is it still set in the 90s, or do they have cell phones now?
No, it's 1994. No, I think cell, and I think it's like, in China and stuff like that. So, no cell phones. No. It's set in 1995. It's set literally when the manga was created.
So it's set like 4 years before Precure, then.
It is set 5 years before Precure. 4 or 5 years. It's 94, 95. I think it's 95. But yeah, 4 years for the events of started the Precure. We have one Precure that came from 2026 and is now in 1999. But as far as I know, I think only the really thing that's objectionable or questionable is the animal deaths that happened. That is, they do note that now quail hunting in Japan is like is prohibited because you're obviously, it's an endangerment issue. You're endangering the species, so it's now banned in modern Japan. So I have little notes like that. So I'm kind of curious if that's what they mean by objectionable or questionable, like, type of content. Because yes, there's a lot of animal deaths in this one. Obviously, eating brains. What?
Human brains animal brains?
No, these are animal brains.
Okay, because the human brains is when you really got to worry about the prion diseases. That one is bad. Humans were apparently not meant to do that.
And they're using animal brains for like not just for like to enhance the flavor of certain types of meat. But we'll see what if that changes in the future. So that's as far as I know is objectionable, but at the same time, just kind of hammering home the fact that this is what we're presenting as unchanged as possible. I think there might be some things they couldn't. This is a longer series, so they couldn't adapt everything. But yeah, they're doing, as far as Troika, the studio behind this,
I think it's pronounced Troika.
Troika,
I think, kind of like the city. Troy?
Yeah, okay, Troika. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I have no complaints. Right now, my only concerns are obviously, again, most anime have production like limits and everything. Will we have production issues moving forward? how long is this series going to go? But those are future concerns. For now, I can only be impressed. So I'm very much looking forward to this one. And then the final one that I have a history with this one. It's funny because I literally picked this up on a whim. Eons ago, though I'm in a villainous, it's a longer title, but I'm only gonna get to the most important part. We have an in-up villainous. She's just not very good at being a villainous, but she is very plucky. So we have this set, obviously, like, you know, we're having Apothecary Diaries and we have Raven in the Inner Palace. It's kind of set around those times, like those Chinese courtroom dramas and everything like that. So we're back in the palace. Yay. We have a festival happening. Okay, yay. We have the consorts and everybody that loves the prince. Or maybe loves the prince. Who knows? During a festival, an incident happens. Oh, no. The beautiful butterfly Raven falls over into the river. Or falls into the water. No! Keigetsu was last seen. Possibly knocking her over. Who? Not that ugly, worthless person. Why? So we have her accused of actually pushing Raren over into the river, or into the water, I should say. We then cut back into Keigetsu in a jail cell. Aww. But it's not Keigetsu? How? Did Raren, how are you in there? And thus, the body swap has been completed. Yay. So, I think the preview of this a while ago, and I was like, oh, a long time
ago. The manga or the light novel?
My first manga. It was interesting. I was like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. But then I think I bought up on a whim at one point, digitally, the manga. I read the first volume, liked it a lot, so I just decided to buy the light novels. I then read up to like the first, like, I think sixth or fifth volumes, and then eventually the sixth volume, any other time, the sixth volume didn't come out yet. And then I stopped at sixth volume because I think the author had said in the afterword that I think I have another two-parter happening after this one. So it's like, all right, I'll just wait for a bit for I jump back in the light novel. But yes, I was on In-App Villainous for a while ago. And now it's got anime, and Dokugoubo is doing an amazing job so far. Visual-wise, I was making the distinction between who is Rerin and who is Kagetsu. Again, it's just two episodes, so we still have much to set up. There is, I think, going to be 11 episodes of this, I think, so I understand.
And we know Dogekobo never makes sequels.
They might be, well, the thing is Toho is powering this one, so if it's popular enough, we'll see. So I think it's just going to death the first two volumes, which would be a good stopping point, technically. There's always more material, but it wants to, again, you want to establish the whole narrative between Raven and Kagetsu, both their histories. Obviously, the main premise is Raven is known as the beautiful butterfly, and she's beloved by everybody, but she's been hiding a pretty chronic illness. She's just been pushing through because she just knows that in the palace, any kind of misgiving or any issue is going to get pounced upon. So she pretty much just powers through it through basically what her family's willpower and everything. As you'll go through in the history of her family history, they just have this type of innate willpower that just pushes through everything. But obviously, she only moves as well as her body can. She's obviously done enough to hide it from like the other like consorts and everything and other families, essentially. Needless to say, Kagetsu had no idea of this because she has her own issues that she's had to move forward with between her past and then within her and her family, essentially, or within her palace, to be more frank. And right now, she thinks she's got it made. She's going to soon learn she does not have it made. Not at all. But yes, it's really good. I'm enjoying this. I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did, but then I read the manga, and then I read the light novels, and now in anime form, it's glorious. Having a great time with it. Definitely watch this. It is a great one. So yes, three shows: Witch of Mongolia, Iron Walk John, In-App Villainous. Must watch. Get on it, everybody.
Yeah, Iron Walk John isn't on my to watch list, although you might push me to it, but the other two definitely are.
Okay, and I will. Okay, I'm sorry to cut you off. The only thing I will say is because it has these kind of abrasive personalities, I can see your mileage varying. That is.
Yeah. And we are doing an episode soon on Jajugar. Oh, God, I'm going to have to figure out how to pronounce this before we do the episode on Manga New Year's, but we are going to be doing that at some point.
Hell, you can say a witch life in Mongol. You can say that.
But I want to be authentic, you know?
Well, no, I'm going with the Yen Press spelling. That's you say you're going to come with the manga, so that's why I said that.
But with that...
Wait.
I think we...
Oh, hold up. Hold up. I still have two more shows to watch this.
How did you forget any?
Well, the only reason why...
I don't see them even on this list.
No, it's under the Admire from Afar section.
Hostile isn't aired yet. Okay, Justin has not yet watched Bleach Thousand Year War Final Season or ReZero Season 4 Part 2 because they haven't aired yet. He will definitely be given his views once we get to it. Okay, moving on to weird news. So, Blue Box manga creator Koji Miura issued an apology on the website formerly known as Twitter. The tweet has now been deleted. She posted an apology to her fans who could not purchase the weekly Shonen Jump magazine that shipped on Monday. This year's 33rd issue of the magazine included the final chapter of Blue Box and a One Piece card game card in celebration of One Piece manga's 29th anniversary. So it seems like everyone bought it for the card, and the people who wanted to read the final chapter of Blue Box weren't able to, which is really sad. There was a joint apology issued by the Weekly Shonen Jump, V-Jump, and Psycho Jump magazine editors, saying that they apologize for the inconvenience caused to our readers and for the confusions created at retail stores and convenience stores. And they have added that a reprint of the issue without the One Piece card will be available for pre-orders at the online Jump character store service. I didn't know they did reprints of the magazine, since it is weekly. maybe this is like kind of an unusual thing.
Yeah, I think it's also an unusual case where they had like a promotion and then it really just got to a, oh wow, too many people really want this, not for good reasons. I think for some, we ran out of issues. So yeah, I think it's an unusual case. That's why they're reprinting it. I think that's why. But yeah, that's kind of wild, like a final volume of a series, a final chapter of a series, and yeah, you can't, fans of the series can't purchase it because of this. Unfortunate. Helen, apparently more Tenchi is needed.
This is confusing because I never hear anybody talking about Tenchi Muyu except to go, what the fuck do you mean it's still going?
But yes, we have Armature Entertainment. They launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund a pilot for Tenchi Galaxy. It's going to be a new anime project in the Tenchi Muyu franchise that serves as a spiritual successor to the Tenchi Universe television series.
I think it has already been funded, even?
Yep, it seeked $400,000, but it already broke that. So that means it's already pretty much funded. It's a case of how much more they can do with that moving forward, or how many fans can jump on it. but yes, kind of crazy. We have two Tenchi topics in this podcast episode alone, and they're of two different types of Tenchi. Excuse me.
All right, so Justin has just listed this one. The script is, yes, live-action Naruto is real. We've talked about these so many times over the years, but once again, Hollywood has decided they're going to try to make an adaptation of a popular manga series, and so they have put out a global casting search for the three main characters, Naruto, Sasuke, and Sakura, and Kishimoto commented on it, saying that he's really excited about it. And an even greater miracle is that the film would be directed by the one and only Destin Daniel Cretton. I have no idea who this is. I don't know if anybody knows who this is. So it's definitely obvious that they're just sort of like kissing up for publicity's sake here. Oh wait, apparently Anna says you did Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. I mean, I'd say, oh, so he's directed a Marvel film, but at this point, who hasn't directed a Marvel film? They've had so fucking many of them. They've kind of been needing all the directors they can get. But yeah, Naruto might happen. Oh, side note, Justin, on the Otakon schedule, you know how they now list when they're having like various cosplay meetups so people aren't all fighting over the same space? The Naruto one is listed as the cosplay meetup for Boruto's dad and Naruto's son.
What?
Someone was having fun when they submitted that one. I also did overhear like some kids at the work cafeteria, Taurus Middle School, I think, debating whether or not you needed to read Naruto before you could start reading Boruto.
Read Naruto, please. Thank you. And final bit of streaming news, we have Banana Fish is going to be added to Netflix August 12th. It's going to be having a... Wait, I said streaming news, right? I did say... But isn't this the weird news section, right? Why do I have...
Yeah, yes, Justin. You're doing a bit. We all know you're doing a bit. Get to the end of the bit.
Yes, so if you remember last year, we had the whole AI dub debacle on Amazon. They had a couple anime that, for whatever reason, they had their program dub it with AI voices, and it was as awful as you would expect it. Banana Fish was one of the notable ones. It got... Oh my god, it was so egregious. Like, it could not be any worse. It was trending so much on Twitter, and then eventually they quietly just removed it. I can only guess, we're only just guessing here, the actual rights holders for Banana Fish were so seething with rage that they said, okay, Amazon, yoink, takes the rights back. So yes, we had a couple weeks ago, or a leader, a month ago or so, we noticed that Prime was no longer had the rights to Banana Fish. So I think we're all wondering, like, all right, who has the rights to it now? And then... A leak that I think a couple of days ago before Netflix officially announced that Banana Fish was gonna be on Netflix because it was gonna be, yeah, it was like list. All right, okay, it won't be a leak. It's not a leak because I think Netflix listed as one of their articles that there was gonna be a sub for this, or there's gonna be on the service. No word at the time it was gonna be dubbed yet, But then eventually, a couple days later, Netflix announced it was going to be a dub. So what a turnaround, Helen. It went from last year having an AI dub to now having real voice actors, actual humans behind a production.
Yeah, better things crazy. Are possible.
That is crazy. I think it's going to, I mean, I can't say I know exactly the dub production process. And then I assume they're dropping it all at once when it comes out August 12th. But I didn't, at least it took under or close to a year before this happened. So it's like, how long did the production for this take? I'm very curious about the production, how long it took to work on this. Seems kind of fast. But yes, that is it for weird news, Helen. Not much weird news, but we had them.
Thank God, because clearly we had a lot to talk about other things. So we've made it, Justin. Maybe this will be under 2 hours once you edit it, but at the moment it is.
Yeah, we'll see when I edit it. Don't you love we have the summer anime season, Hella? Don't you love we talk about anime season? Don't you love it? All right, where can we find you?
I think recording this podcast technically took as long as that World Cup game.
Where can we find you on the interwebs, Helen?
On the interwebs, let's see. I'm a frequent poster over on Blue Sky. I mean, I feel like I'm posting frequently there. Retweets count, right? You can find me over there at Wandering Dreamer. And like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I've got another podcast that I do called Mung in Your Ears. That can be found under that name on most podcasting services. If you find a service that doesn't have us on there, let us know. We'll get it up there through the magic of technology. Our website for that is Taiku Podcast, which is spelled T-A-I-I-K-U Podcast. And that is also the name of the Blue Sky account where we post whenever we've got a new episode up, because Corey just did not want to manage having three different accounts for three different podcasts. So we are all lumped together under the main one. Because yes, our manga podcast is a spinoff of a sports anime podcast. Justin?
You can still find me on Twitter at Kami Tsunomi. You can not hear me yapping about the mobile update that looks really like it's just going to garbage. It's just bad.
Oh, for Fire Emblem Heroes?
No. I'm talking about the actual update for Twitter. It's really bad. It's really bad.
Yeah, I have not updated my app in like well over a year. It's like once they were like, okay, the next update's going to give it that stupid X logo, I just have not updated to that.
I think that at some point they have to force update it. So even if you didn't, like,
nope, it's still on my phone and it still works.
Yep, as long as you don't click it, I think you should be fine. Maybe not.
No, I can still like actively use the app on my phone looking like that. Okay. I just have been carefully sure never to update it.
Okay, understood. All right. But yeah, still there. Obviously, you got Fortune's Weave. They're teasing the voice actors this past week, the English voice actors this week. It's been an interesting marketing strategy. But yes,
do we know anything more about the plot yet?
Sort of, but I'm not explaining that in this episode. Okay. We have the social media accounts of the OESG. So we got Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all that stuff. You can obviously check out the OESG.com Reviews of Futures. You can subscribe to the OESG podcast on the Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or as to any RSS service you have. You can subscribe to my email. Reach you leaving rating and review on a whole bunch of services. Yay. Until next time, everybody. Bye.
See ya.